Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics podcast. I'm your host, Dino Kubo. Today, I have a very special guest, Steven Arian. Steven, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much for coming on. I was so happy that I could get the arc for New York Minute, and I was even happier that I enjoyed it so much. And like I was saying before, I just
Even
crushed it. Yeah, I just crushed it.
better, yeah.
But I have to say, like, I can't wait to dive into that one in particular today, just because, I bought a bunch of your books. I have a bunch of the paperbacks and other, ones that people recommended to me. Herman Stuerningle would be one of them. Greatest Podcast in the Multiverse. Adrian M. Gibson. I had quite a few people who are like, "Have you read this yet?" I'm like, "I'm trying so hard." So I bought a bunch at one time. So when that was actually my first book of yours that I read, so I was like so excited that. You, I don't know, there was just so many things that you did and your tone. I loved the characters. And I think that's why I enjoyed it so much. Like, I just found out that not only did I like that book, but you're my type of, author. So, that was really cool. It's always cool, when you can have that experience the first time with someone's book, and writing. So I thought that was really cool. So, and then I listened to your interview with Herman on his podcast. So I was really excited to hear a couple of those updates and things. So yeah, I was like, I got to try and see if, Stephen will come on. So, I really appreciate you coming on today and letting me pick your writer brain. So thank you so much.
Thank you for that. I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's nice thing of you try someone's book that's new to you, like you say, and then you realize they got a whole bunch of other work. You're like, okay, I'm now going to hunt them down and start doing that. Which I've had that. I've kind of found someone and gone, what else have they done? I need more of this. Then you go out and start reading them. So like I only started reading Christo Rocchio like 2 years ago, and I sort of read the first book and was like, okay, now I need to get the rest of them and start reading them. So then I started pacing myself and working my way through. So I'm nearly up to date now. But it's that kind of joy when you find a new author. But there's so many, this is it. I'm always like, do I read something I know or do I read something new? And I'm always trying to do new authors, but you have to get used to their rhythm. And that can take a little bit of extra time. So, but once you're in, that's it. Then you just, keep reading more of the stuff, which is lovely.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, Christopher, like I have Empire of Silence ready and waiting, and I'm just waiting on my best friend. We have like, I know, right? It's been like 2 years. We did Malazan Book of the Fallen first with an extra of the prequels like thrown in. And then now we're on we actually just got done with Way of Kings, and then we're actually almost done with Lies of Locke Lamora. And then I'm trying to see if I could slip in Empire of Silence on him and then go back to Sanderson again. And then, just kind of go through the three series that way. Otherwise, I told him, I go, I don't think I'm gonna be able to wait for you, especially once the new year hits, because I was like, it's on my list for 2025, for stuff I want to read. Yeah, so that's definitely a great recommendation there. But yeah, that's awesome. So I want to just kind of, get used to, our audience, just get used to you, your writing style and like that. So, just to introduce yourself, what has your writing journey been like, really, like up until this point?
So my story is quite a long one, but I'll do the short version because we haven't got
Either
hours. So
one.
I've been a fantasy reader all my life, ever since I was little. I read fantasy from about the age of, I don't know, 8 or 10. And I've never stopped. I'm always reading, and I predominantly fantasy. I do read other genres, but I always come back to fantasy. And you look at my bookshelves,
I'll say you have
some
some
it's
good ones.
read. Yeah, some of it's read, some of it's to read, and there's a mix. I started writing novels years ago. It took me over 10 years to get an agent, because when I was starting, self-publishing isn't where it is now. It was very, very different. It was very primitive. It didn't exist. The likes of Ben Galley and Roger Hayes were just kind of starting the process alongside Amazon, kind of in step, working it out with them. But I went down the traditional route because there wasn't anything else. Eventually, I got an agent in 2013. She liked the book that I'd sent her. We talked. I went to London, met her. She gave me some advice on how to make it better. I spent a year editing it with her. And during that year, she then started reaching out to editors to let them know, got some new clients. What do you think of this book? Once it was ready, we sent it to Orbit Books, and they had a 7-day kind of period to read it and make an offer. And if they didn't make an offer, it would go out to all of the publishers. They made an offer on the trilogy in those 7 days. So I that's it. You got a trilogy, boom. And then I spent another year editing the book with my publisher, doing the cover, all that kind of thing. And my my debut book, Battle Mage, came out in 2015, and it was the first one of a trilogy. And I've basically had like a book out every year since then, apart from 2020 for kind of obvious reasons. So I've done two trilogies and a prequel novella with Orbit Books, which is all about mages and magic and lots of big kind of battles and lots of magic stuff. Then I did a duology, The Quest for Heroes, with Angry Robot Books, which is The Coward and the Warrior. And then my current trilogy with Angry Robot Books is The Nightingale and the Falcon. And that's more historic fantasy. And one and two are out, and three is out next year. So that's kind of like 10 books in 9 years, basically.
Oh, yeah. So if you're new to this podcast, that's a lot. Most people don't know
A book
that.
every year, pretty much. Yeah, there's a lot impacted into that, nearly a decade. It's like there's a lot has
For
gone on in
particularly
that
for
time.
traditionally published, particularly in terms of the things that have gone on, also I would say within the 10 years, like you said, the pandemic and even like post-pandemic, right? Like things were pretty crazy. My second season, like a year and a half ago, got like so mangled because I was trying at the time to align with book releases and stuff, and then I just kind of gave up because nothing was, nothing was coming out even remotely. Even for indie people, they're like, "Oh, I'm just so, busy," things like that. Yeah, so it definitely got pretty crazy. But well, that's really cool. I know I have The Coward sitting on my shelf. I bought the Kindle for that too. So I have to say, like that, I have, I think the only one, maybe I think I know I have your first trilogy too. I might be missing one of them. I'm trying to remember which one. But I think it's Chaos Mage. I think that's the one that I don't have yet.
Yeah, book three. Yeah,
But
yeah.
yeah. So I'm really looking forward to Battle Mage and then and Blood Mage. I actually found them like brand new at like oh, it was so weird. You don't usually see Orbit or Tor or any of these other ones at this type of bookstore like near me in central New York, and it's like kind of like a wholesale place. And I'm like, my wife goes, "Oh, there's a bookstore." We're going shopping. She goes, "Oh, there's a bookstore. I'm gonna go to all these stores for clothes." And I'm like, "Okay, I guess I'll be in
I'll
here
stay here and
for
look at the books.
a little bit." Yeah. And I went by and I found you, Peter MacLean, Priest of Lies, and Michael R. Fletcher. And I'm trying to remember which one of Mike's, I think it was like his third book. So I found all three of you and I was like, "Oh, this is a good day."
A
And then
good
I found a
haul,
couple other
yeah.
people too. Yeah, I ended up having like five or six, and like I had those two, and then I had another one from Orbit. Yeah, so I was like, "Oh, this is a pretty good book day." So I came out and she was like, "I thought you said you're not gonna find anything." She was like a second post. I know it
Well,
was like
I got
90
lucky.
degrees out. Yeah, it's like 90 degrees out. We had to walk like a mile to the car to put them back in. It was totally worth it. Totally worth it. So yeah, that's really awesome.
Good
Yeah, but
book.
they just sounded really cool. But The Coward for me though, if people haven't, read The Coward or looked at the blurb, I don't know. Like I think everybody should, because I just thought that was a cool way of, just the blurb itself got me. That's on my list for 2025 as well, because I've been saving it for a bit with the paperbacks in particular. And I don't know, that the idea that you had for that one just sound really unique. So the reason I bring that up is because I really think like New York Minute, like the same thing. I thought, oh, that sounded cool. Like when you posted about it, it's like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. And I really liked, like the blurb and stuff for Blood Mage, things like that. But I don't know, like those two in particular with The Coward, New York Minute, to me, just it said something a little bit different. It just felt like, you know what I mean? And I'm so glad when I got into, New York Minute, I was like, oh, yep, it totally had the feel of the blurb. And I think it made total sense and really connected. And I think that's where I end up enjoying it a lot more. So that's where I was really excited because I was like, I already bought The Coward and Blood Mage. So I was like, I am like so excited for 2025. I have so many great authors on there. And I'm like really excited to share my list with people. So I'm filtering through a
Yeah.
little bit, but yeah,
Cool.
it's gonna be a good one. It's gonna be a good one. So I got actually, yeah, I got those two on there of yours. So I'm really excited about that.
Okay.
But in terms of our audience, can you just tell us what New York Minute's about, and then maybe like how you came up with that idea?
Yeah, so New York Minute is my first indie published project. It's been something I've been thinking about for a while, doing some indie publishing. It was finding time in amongst all my other books. I've always done my books on time. People are like, oh, I'll wait for the series. I read a book every year since 2015. So none of these things about I'll wait till the series is wrapped up. I've done it on time or early every single time for my deadline. So I'm an author you can count on for that. So there you go.
Awesome.
In between books, when I'd handed in one draft and I was waiting to get the next stage of the book, I had a bit of time and I'd had an idea in the back of my head. And you get ideas all the time, and I just kind of write them down and leave them. And then when that project is finished, I go back and then look at the next kind of thing. And this one had been bugging me for a while, and I had a bit of time. I thought, okay, I'm just going to write it. I'm going to see what it is, see what happens with it, and I'll work out what to do with it later. It ended up being 42,000 words, so it's slightly long for a novella. It crosses lots of genre boundaries, so that kind of made it a bit awkward. I left it for a while, and then I thought, okay, maybe it's just a straight fantasy novel, and it wasn't. I couldn't change it, and I thought maybe I'm making it into a full novel. And basically, I was trying to make it into something that it wasn't. And I thought, no, just leave it for what it is. So it's speculative fiction, I guess, is the best way to describe it, or fantasy noir. But then again, when you say fantasy, people think that there's magic and dragons and all that kind of stuff. So it's basically a noir story set in an alternate New York City. The background to the story that's kind of touched on around the edge of the story is that the human race has left Earth. We've gone to another planet and we've started over for whatever reason. And the first place that they land and they start trying to build again, they name it New York. And here we go. We're going to build it. We're going to put the skyscrapers up and we're going to have paved roads and we're going to have electricity, except partway through the process, the architects have got all these plans and the people kind of say, yeah, we don't really want to do that. And they need the people to build all these things. And they've already put up like 8 or 9 skyscrapers, but they haven't done the rest of New York yet. And the people are like, yeah, we don't want to do that. We want to do something different. We want to live a different kind of life. And so the architects, kind of the system of government collapses and they move on. And the people move in and basically trying to create their own life. So technology is stalled at a certain level, but we're starting again in this brand new world. And New York has grown up and there's lots of people and there's crime and there's crime gangs and there's police. And so it's a first person point of view story, which I haven't done before either, about a guy who used to be a cop in New York and now he's a private eye. And the story begins with him, someone knocks on his front door and basically recruits him to try and find the missing daughter of the most powerful crime boss in the city. And he doesn't really have a choice in taking on the job or not, because his life is at risk if he doesn't. But also he takes the job because a lot of innocent people will be hurt in the process if he doesn't do it. So it's a very noir story with a kind of downtrodden and beaten PI who's been through the grinder a few times. He's seen things, he's experienced things when he was a cop. There's street gangs, there's crime, there's... It's really not a gentle story for those who were faint of heart.
No.
It's quite brutal. There's violence, but there's lots of familiar things. Despite the fact that it's set on this other planet, there's a lot of stuff that is familiar. And the idea was basically to explore, if we go over and we start again and we have a fresh start, can we be better? If we don't have all the baggage of Earth, if we've got those are kind of so far away, they're just memories or stories, can the human race be better in this new place? And the main character, Cole, is kind of navigating his way through the underworld of New York, hoping we can be better. And he sees the good and the bad of the human race really up close. And so it's a story about a search for a missing woman, but also it's about us as people.
Well, I really liked how you started the story in particular, where particularly for a novella of any size, I felt like as soon as that knock happens, I read like the first chapter part and then I set it down. And then I felt like it just got me into the story right away in the world. I had to go right back. I was supposed to read 2 other books, Stephen, for reviews for authors, and then they had to wait. So my wife was like, I'm doing something I can. I'm just like, trying to cook and I have him. And she's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm trying to read this book. Like it's so good. And she's like, I don't think I've seen you get pulled in this quickly before. I was like, no, just, I was like, Steven just takes you right there. I was like, now I know exactly what we're doing. But you know, I do have to say though, I liked that. I like that we were, I like how, you know, you didn't tell me, you showed me what was going on in the world. I felt like we were right there, you know, in the driver's seat with Cole. You know, and then as the two of them are going, I mean, I don't know, I felt like I was like the third, you know, the third bad boy, you know. And you know, we were going on this detective story, you know, and I thought that was really cool. But I thought you did a good job of making it familiar enough, but also it was interesting because then there were new things, you know, the things that were different. So I'm just kind of curious at what, how did you choose the things that you wanted to be familiar to us as, you know, the readers, but also, you know, how did you choose some things that you kind of wanted to be different? I, that to me, that was just so interesting. So I'm kind of curious at how you kind of sorted those kind of things for us.
It's something I think about a lot. Even when I'm writing a straight fantasy novel, you kind of have to have a certain level of things that are familiar to readers. I'm not a writer who will create a world, throw the reader in the deep end, and leave them to sink or swim. I mean, some authors do that. I'm not criticizing it. That's their approach. That isn't my approach. My approach is I want to give the reader enough that's familiar in whatever the kind of the world or whatever the kind of story is that I've set up that they understand certain things, and I want them to engage in the story and the characters and the emotions. If I put too many things that are too weird up front, my fear is it will push them out of the story and they just won't be able to follow what's going on. I don't want them to be worrying about what's on the coins and how tall the buildings are and all that kind of stuff. It's like I want you to worry about the fate of the characters. So with New York Minute, it was a case of a lot of the names of the places are familiar. A lot of the things sound familiar. Like the fact that when he goes to pick up his dagger, it's like a Smith and Wesson dagger. And you're like, wait, what? Or like someone else has got, you know, like a Hauser hatchet or whatever it might be. And you're like, oh, okay, I get it. And you understand that, right, it's been manufactured by a company and that company makes weapons, but in this case, they're axes and swords. Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah. And like, but then there's other things like people drink coffee because it exists and there are horses, but because this isn't Earth, the horses are a little bit different, a little bit weird. So it's finding that balance of trickling stuff in that's a little bit odd, but giving enough that a reader doesn't go, wait, I don't understand. I can't follow the plot anymore. And I'd rather they engage with the story than go, right, I have to go and get a thesaurus out to work out what that means and what's going on. Go back and reread it to understand it. I'm like, I that's not my approach. I want them to be readable books that are fun and interesting adventures. And we might talk about it a bit, but my current series, the Nightingale and Falcon, is historical fantasy. So there again, it's like how much history do I put in and how much stuff from that period that people are going to be like, wait, what's going on? I don't get it. Well, versus, right, this is familiar. Oh, I understand where we are in the story now. Right, let's go. So it's a constant thing I'm always concerned about, and I'm constantly navigating with a lot of attention, probably more than other people. It's a big thing for me.
Well, but I think that makes total sense though, because you know, as like I said, like you get us in the story right away. And but also once Cole leaves his apartment and then, you know, we're actually get going, you know, and then he goes to his next dex, you know, destination, to one of the other characters. I don't know, like even as he's walking there, and then as the two of them are leaving the next location, we're already getting that glimpse of what's familiar and what's not. But it did, it added to the story because for me, it just didn't pull me out at all. You know, I thought it was interesting as I was reading, and it was helping me to build, you know, the story in my head, or you know, the scenery, whatever you want to say, but it was helping me, it wasn't pulling me out. So I don't know. I just I've read so many people recently that I really enjoyed their stuff, but their style of writing, it kept pulling me out. And that's something I struggle with as a writer. And I don't know, I just was like, I'm trying to do it the way that Stephen does it in this novella. So I kind of like say to my friend, I was like, oh, I was like, you gotta read this novella. So I was like trying to explain to him, I was like, this is exactly what I like. Cause him and I really like Patricia Briggs also, because your two styles like that, there's world building, you know, there's characterization, but it doesn't pull you out of the story. It just adds to the story. And I would say you guys have a particular flavor or style of doing it. Which is different than other authors. But it was definitely like my type. I liked the tone. I liked, how,
Of
like
course.
when you, I liked when you, I felt like we were hitting all the notes, like if I wanted you to hit it here, it was here, I had the world building, but then I was with these characters. I was learning, Cole and, the backstories, of really all the characters, but I felt like it just kept leading me to the end. And whew, what an end. So that was, yeah, it was just, it was a straight, I felt like it was very linear. Not that, I could tell exactly what you were going to do because those are boring stories, but I felt like we were constantly moving forward, and at a really solid pace. So I thought it was really cool.
With a
Yeah.
novella, you've got to be constantly just moving, because
Yeah.
it is, you
Yeah.
haven't got the time. I mean, people are always saying, every chapter should advance the plot, and that's for the novel, that's true, but there's caveat. With a novella, I haven't got any time to waste and any word count to
Yep.
waste. And even then, I still went long for a novella. Like, it's slightly too long, and I'd have to lose a few thousand words to qualify technically for a novella, but it is what
Yeah.
it is. And I just stopped worrying about it after a while. I'm like, no, I'm fine with it like this. So.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned length because I went through it a lot quicker than, a lot of other ones. And then I'm looking and I was like, I remember you said that on Herman's podcast, and then I like went back and looked and I was like, how that was so interesting as a reader and a writer, where I was like, okay, so these are, I love novellas. I'm a novella fiend. They're just like my jam. I love novels. I love novellas though, because I've read so many great ones, that they, I've had a great experience. I think some other people maybe I heard have maybe not had the experience, or maybe they want something different. But for me, a lot of times, as long as you give me exactly what I want in it, which I felt that you did in this one in particular. But yeah, I didn't notice that it was like longer. Or one of them I looked back, you think you had like maybe 17,000 words compared to the one I had just read, but yours felt a lot quicker and shorter to me, which is just funny, right? But it just goes to show you, right, that what you can do, with pace or characterization, or the proper way of world building, things like that. So yeah, so if anybody wants to, to, I think, to see how you should pace a novella, and blend different genres, I think that this is a really good one, for them to take a look at. I remember when you, like, on Twitter, you're like, oh, who wants to read this? It's this and this. And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. But I just didn't think that, I didn't think it was going to be that interesting. I was like, oh, stupid's cool. I was like, yeah, and I was like, yeah, I'll take a novella. I'll read it. I love novellas, but I just wasn't expecting that. So, I thought it was really cool. I'm curious that, because I'm trying to do like a fantasy, almost like a cozy fan, I guess cozy, some people are calling it like a cozy fantasy, but like with the Mughal Empire, but like a fantasy version. And I want to do like a few novellas with the same character, right? So the first one I want to do is like a fantasy noir story. So there's a guard, and he ends up witnessing another guard being killed. And then he's like, okay, this guy took bribes and stuff as a guard, but he was a pretty good dude, And it's not even about that guy, it's about the main character. He's like a veteran, of this army, and he's just a good dude. And he wants to solve this thing, and then it leads him down all these problems. So I'm like, never written mysteries, so I'm like trying to figure out the noir aspect. So I'm just curious at how did you set up like the noir part of the story or the mystery of the story? I'm just kind of curious at how, you were able, because I thought it was really interesting. And then, you were able to do some different things within that part of the genre. So I'm kind of curious, like just how you were setting up the mystery, I guess. It was really cool.
So I'm a big fan of like cop shows and stuff. I've watched them and all my life. I don't actually read a lot of crime fiction, which is surprising. I read a little bit, but I watch a lot of cop shows. And so I'm always thinking about when they get to the end of the thing, they've solved the murder, and then you work backwards and think about, well, what happened and how did it happen, and it's the mystery and the puzzle. And as long as all the pieces there in place, and as long as it makes consistent sense, I'm happy with that in terms of watching it or reading it. It's when they don't know where the story's going and they kind of spitball, and then they get to the end and go, "Eh, that's the thing," which is why shows like Lost annoyed me so much, because
I
they threw everything
agree.
against the wall And then you get to the end and you're like, well, what was the ending? Yeah, we didn't really know. We're just kind of making it up. So I was determined, like any kind of crime or fantasy story that involves a criminal element, I'd plan it thoroughly. So I plan all my stories anyway, but I just had to go because this story is a quite emotional one. In fact, it deals with a missing woman. It's more a case of every time so I'm planning it, I then take a step back and say, well, why does this matter to the person? Not what's the logical step that who did what? And it's okay, why did they do it? Why would they do X or Y? What did this mean to them? What was the cost? What was the risk? What are they willing to sacrifice? And then onto the next step. And then thinking, right, well, what would be an interesting twist, but still make sense with everything that you've set up? So it's because some people throw in red herrings, you know, which can be interesting, but it's a case of if there's not a good reason for them to be there, sometimes they just feel like you were just having, oh, that'll throw people off. And I'm like, there should be a better reason than just throw someone off the scent. So I'm quite, it's weird. Writing is generally, we're creative liars. That's what we are. You know, we make up a load of stuff. But I'm also quite a logical person. That's the other kind of half of my brain. And so I logically planned this thing out and then built the emotion on top of the framework that allowed me to do the noir thing. There are a lot of touchstones in this story that will feel very familiar to just crime and noir fans and readers because it has a lot of the same kind of things, not predictable, but a certain kind of things. And so it was being aware of the genre as much as planning the story, I think. And those two aspects helped me build something that feels satisfying. You don't get to the end and go, what? Well, why? That makes no sense. Or, you know, why would that character do that? Like, I've set all these things up. I've explained the emotional arc of the people and why they've done it. Then you can go, oh, okay, I can see why they might do those things now. So it always starts with character for me. And then from there, you kind of work backwards through the mystery, or in this case, the murder, or whatever it might be, and go backwards and justify what they did and why.
Well, I don't know. I like how you say that because I think it makes total sense. And I do think that maybe that was, I do think that's one of the things I was struggling with. It was, I do think some people just throw out red herrings just to throw you off and then are like, there's the ending over here, ta-da. And you're like, well, why, what was that?
Why do we do
So, I have
that?
had that with several stories between books or television shows or movies that I've have watched. I'm like, I felt like The Illusionist back in the day had such like a with Edward Norton, like had such a great, I thought that that was a great twist, and made total sense. And I think after a while it's like people were just trying to do it just to do it,
Well,
yeah,
it's
like you were
that
saying,
the
they're
M.
not
Night
doing.
Shyamalan thing, looking for the
Yes.
twist. It's the
Yes. Oh my
prestige.
gosh.
I mean, like the prestige, when you watch that and you understand the twist
Yes.
in that, that is brilliant. I mean, I met
It
Christopher
was it.
Priest, and I don't know how different the book
Oh.
is from the film, but
Yeah.
from watching the film, the stuff, the twists happen, you go, oh, that's really, really good. And then you find out the other reasons for the kind of half of it, and you're like,
Yep.
oh my God, that's terrible. But it makes perfect sense within the story. It wasn't like we've just thrown something up against the wall to see what will happen. It all
Yep.
makes so much more sense. And that's what's really, really good about that one, because it still stands out for me, you know,
Yeah.
versus the Lost of this world.
Yeah.
Not to
So
go
funny
back to
that you
that
mentioned
part,
the
you know.
Prestige because nobody ever. I'm like, oh, have you seen the Prestige? They're like, what is that? I'm like, oh my God. I'm like,
It's so good.
it's a
Hugh
writer?
Jackman,
Yes. I'm like,
Christian Bale,
yeah. Oh
amazing,
my gosh.
amazing.
Yeah.
Early
I can't
Scarlett
believe.
Johansson as well. So.
Yes. I forgot. Yeah. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
she's the
That's the one I'm
girlfriend.
gonna. Yeah. I have to go back to that one. I loved both of those. So they came out at the same time. And my friend, him and I, right, like he, we like we were arguing, right? We're like debating which one had a better ending and which one had a better twist. And I don't know. I think I came I think I used to think The Illusionist, but then now I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I liked both for different reasons. I but I definitely think like there were certain movies at that time in particular, those two, as good examples that really like hit certain points, for me as a writer. And I just end up enjoying them a lot more, in terms of, watching them. So I think that there were some really great ones. But yeah, those are two really great examples. Yeah, but I totally agree. I think some people just do a red herring and it just doesn't make any sense. I think it's also like magic, right?
Yes.
World building. I think anything, right? Yeah, right. It should add to a character, should add to the story. And if not, it's a throwaway thing. It's like, throw it away, in my opinion. I don't know. I didn't think that you had really with the world building. I thought there were some really cool things. There was a character. I don't want to give anything away, to be spoiler free, but Cole's friend and has a situation, right, where I
Yep.
liked what you did. It's limiting, right, to a certain degree, but I like how you use that limitation as well, because I think it can be used at certain times as a strength, and I thought that you used it to further the story. So when you read New York Minute, you guys will know exactly what I'm talking about. So it's really, really cool.
It also
But
has a real world parallel to things,
yes.
particularly that's one of the reasons I created it as well, because it parallels a lot of things in the world at the moment with an older generations. That's all I'll say, but it parallels that in some ways. And so that was on my mind. I mean, the best science fiction and fantasy and speculative fiction is talking about something else. It always is. And this novella is no different. I'm talking about so many different things in there. And that was on my mind because of kind of aging relatives and things. So yeah, it's a fun thing to play around with, to put a twist on. Yeah, it's a limitation for Bracken, but he can use it to his advantage in some ways. But there's a risk, like anything else, there's a risk of using it. So
No, I just, but I thought that that was it was like just a cool usage of something that, just an enduring issue that people have to deal with, right? But you looked at it from a writer's standpoint differently, and taught me something differently in the story about it. So I thought that was just like, that was one of the things I really, really enjoyed, where it's a horrible thing, but I thought that I did come away with something different, because I too know people, who have had similar situations. So I just connected a lot with his character, and I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting to connect right away with Cole's character. But yeah, and even just like Bracken's, just like his characterization. I loved how you also too, like with Cole and Bracken, they're very similar, but they're also very different people. So I'm kind of curious that, did you have the idea for Cole first and then Bracken, or kind of them at the same time? I'm just kind of curious at how those two characters kind of came to be the way that they did, because I thought they were really played really well off each other. So.
They're two halves of me, two facets of me in some ways,
Oh, that's cool.
the pessimist and the optimist. Cole is very kind of jaded. He's seen things, he's lived through all sorts of stuff, and he has quite a negative, misanthropic view of humanity. He doesn't believe that we can do well and can get better all most of the time, because he's seen his job as a police officer and then as a PI. He says this, it's not a spoiler, it's in the story. It exposes him to the worst of humanity. You don't get a PI and be like, every day is finding a missing cat, because that's a great story. And then so it's a happy ending. It's like, no, he's met a lot of the worst people in the world through his work. And so it's kind of twisted him and jaded him to the world and the view of everybody, because he's focused through that lens. Whereas Bracken is like, yeah, it's pushed you down that way, but don't forget, for every person that you're investigating, there's someone else connected to them, a friend, a family member that misses the person that you're looking for, who's been murdered, or whatever it might be. And they're good people. The victim might have been a good person. And so he has a much more kind of hopeful and optimistic view of people. And it's the two sides of me. It's basically me arguing with myself through these two characters about, are we going to make it? Are we going to make it as a species? If we had this fresh start, can we be better? I don't know, is my answer after writing this as an exercise on this question. My answer is still, I don't know. Some days I see things in the news that fill me with hope, and other days I see things that fill me with absolute dread. And so I have to kind of take a breather, step back, and try and look for the good that's out there, and not just focus on the dark. Because if all you do is watch the news every day, it's really depressing. It's really dark and it's really bleak. They usually try to lift the news with like a nice line item at the end saying, oh, and so-and-so found 12 missing, rescued 12 puppies. Great, great,
Yeah.
good to him. Well done. Okay, see you again next tomorrow, guys. And then the next 50 minutes of the first hour is bad news. And then you got like 2 minutes. Yeah. So it's that thing of, can we be better? Maybe, but I don't
Yeah.
know. I don't know. I hope some days and other days I just kind of think, no.
No, I totally get that. And I guess like because I'm also so before so this I guess like so I was having some issues with my teeth. Right before I read this novella, so I had started the first time. it happened before and after. Don't worry, guys. It was a co total coincidence. It had nothing to do with the novella. So, but I was reading Gray Pharaoh, so Harry Dresden's like book eight. And I started it, and then because I had so much pain, I just couldn't focus on, the audible or whatever. And then I had had surgery the first time, so then. That's when I was like, oh, I'm ready to read again. So I read yours really quickly. But then as I'm going back to Grave Peril, I'm about to be done. It took me a while to get back to it because I had a second tooth have a situation that was reminding me of the first time. So I had great memories of New York Minute, but not Grave Peril, if that makes sense. But it was funny because I'm like reflecting. I think what I like so much about Brackett and Cole was that to me, Cole resembled Harry a lot, with a lot of the cynicism, but still trying to do good and having those questions. And then John Carpenter, who's my favorite character, who like Bracken, right? Who has a different type of strength, which isn't even having to do with, their skill set or whatever, but just their mindset. And I feel like they pull Harry through, John pulls Harry through, and I felt that, Bracken pulled Cole through, and there were other times that Cole old Bracken through just like Harry does with John. And I liked that even though they're two different types of characters, or two halves of a whole, I liked that they needed each other but helped each other at different times and took the lead. And even in this novella, right, even though so many thousand words, but it's still a novella, but I thought that the relationship throughout was one of my favorite things. But I do really like how that part resonated with me because sometimes my best friend and I are like that. He's like, we're not gonna make it. I'm like, we're gonna make it. And then the next week I'm like, I don't think I'm gonna make it. And we just check. We're pulling each other across the finish line. Sometimes he's back there, sometimes I'm in front, like that kind of thing. So I don't know. That to me, like I said to him, I was like, I think you're really gonna like this, novella. Just from that aspect. So I don't know. I just thought that you like nailed the buddy cop thing. I thought that it was just a great relationship. I'm really looking forward to seeing more of the characters, those two in particular, in the future. So I thought, I don't know. I really enjoyed them. They were two of my, that was one of the relationships that I enjoyed the most from any book I've read so far. I've read almost like 40 books this year. So I have to say, like, that's one of my favorite
Thank you.
relationships so far. So, and I have a lot of D&D, style. There's a lot of, I've read a lot of relationships this year, to be honest, in a lot of books, but that's got to be my favorite combo so far. So I thought those were really cool
Thank you.
characters, but that's cool
I
to,
love
yeah. It's just cool
Dresden
to hear how
Files
you
as
said
well.
that.
I love Dresden Files. Huge fan, massive fan. I can't wait. I've read. I'm up to date. I'm waiting for like the next one.
Oh,
I love Don.
trying.
I love Dresden. I love Harry. You see, the difference with Harry, I guess, and Cole is Harry is naturally quite more optimistic. As he's gone on, it's not a spoiler. He goes through all sorts of more stuff. He does get darker and just get more jaded, but he has more people to lift him up around him. And in this case, it's just kind of Cole and Bracken, but they've grown up together. The difference is, I guess, Cole and Bracken have been kids since friends since they were children, fighting and running on the streets all the way through to being adults and having families and stuff. So they've known each other a long time. They've got this shorthand thing. There's a moment where Bracken just sort of says, "You're brooding about this thing," and he hasn't said anything. He just knows him that that's what you're doing. And I've got friends I've known for at this point 30 plus years, and they can know when just the way I'm looking, they were like, "You're doing that thing again." They know me. So it's, I was trying to bring some of that kind of shorthand friendship that you've just built up over decades. And I'm glad it worked. I'm glad it was successful for you.
No, totally. Like my best friend, him and I, next month 20 years. Like, that's a long time, you know? So, but that's like, we used to play a game with our third friend, my other really good friend, and been friends for like 17 years. But like, the three of us, like, nobody would ever let us play Outburst together or Apples to Apples because they knew, like, we just knew, you know,
You'll
what the
know
other
things
person
too
was thinking.
easily.
Yeah. So they're like, no, you're not allowed to be on the same
Different
team
teams, different
anymore.
teams. That's it.
So yeah, so they, I don't know, just that's what it reminded me of. So it was like super funny. But I'm curious that, like, for Cole in particular, like, why did you go? So you said you love, you know, like cop shows and stuff like that. I'm curious at why you went with Cole as a former cop who's now a PI versus him just being a PI or versus him just being a cop. I'm just kind of curious at where that decision came from and why.
So if he was just a cop, he would have had more rules, more restrictions, more things holding him back in place. And he's quite a free agent. He picks and chooses his jobs. And the nature of this job is one he can't refuse because the person who's hired him is this crime boss. He certainly can't. And if he was a cop, that causes even more problems. And he couldn't bring his friend in to work with him and hire him and sort of, you know, stuff like that. And the fact that he used to be a cop means he's spent time around criminals for a long time and he's worked within the system and he kind of came to the conclusion that the system isn't working. And he stepped away from it to become a PI to help people on a more one-to-one basis because he felt that was a better approach than working within the limitations of the rules that were set up by the police force in this version of New York. And so he basically said, you know, no, I can do better by helping people one-on-one. I know it's them, me. There's no one else to blame, but it goes wrong. I'm not limited by the rules and the systems. It's my own kind of guiding principles and stuff. So it made him a lot freer, I think, and more independent, really.
Well, I like how it still gave him some dependence because he's like, oh, I need another man. I'm gonna go get Bracken. So I don't know. I thought it was really cool because I wouldn't have thought of it that way. So I thought, oh, that's really neat, you know, and especially when he, I don't feel like it's a spoiler, especially when he meets or just runs into some of the people he used to know on the force, right? I don't know. I felt like it added like a whole nother element. To it, if that makes sense, where yeah, where he is independent, so he has to worry, right? Because he's not there now, and you know they don't like the fact that he's not one of them now. So yeah, so I just thought that that just added a lot of depth to the character, and I don't know, it gave you a much different perspective of looking at things through his eyes, even with one of the other characters, right, where they're questioning her and just like that whole interaction or her apartment and everything. I don't know. It was just like, I thought it was really well done. And I thought it was interesting because of his position rather than, you know, with being a PI and being a former cop, because he knows what's going on. He knows what she's trying to do. But at the same time, you know, he's only human. So I just thought it was a really cool perspective or take on, you know, how to do a noir character. So it was really
Thank
cool.
you.
Some people I'm like, oh, no offense. I'm like, so I have to read, like, I have a monster hunter. He's a former Marine. And because I was like, I want to do something like Harry Dresden, but I was like, I don't want to do a wizard. I don't want to do a werewolf. I don't want to do this. So I like the blend. So I have like primordial spirits that they can attach to, and his happens to be a wolf. And you get certain powers and stuff. And that's actually going to be in my world where the lycanthrope myth came from. But I like to do things just a little different. So I don't know that it subverted my expectations of the genre when, you know, he first came in, because I thought he was just going to be a PI. And I was like, oh, he's a former cop. I was like, that's really interesting. And then once it started to get going, and you see not just that he's jaded, but why, I don't know. It just added a lot of layers to the onion for me. And it was cool to peel those back throughout the story. And I felt like there was a lot there for both, you know, him and Bracken, you know, and even the crime boss too, you know, where which I thought was a really good job on your part, because you didn't just be like, yeah, here's a crime boss. It was like there was a lot there too to unpack, and especially with the relationship, you know, because I know, you know, he's probably had some sort of interaction with him previously as a cop, I would assume, right? Especially with, you know, how the crime boss has stationed himself within New York. So I thought that that was done really well. But yeah, that's super cool.
Thank you.
In terms of, I gotta ask, in terms of another novella or Maybe more. Are you planning on writing anymore? Or I'm just wondering at how much how much work I have to do to get people to know this novella to get another one, because I'm up for the challenge. Because I work with indie people all the time. Like, I do nothing, but I'm like, Christopher G. Brennan was like, "Oh, thanks for your help with getting my book two out there." I was like, "It's not. I'm not altruistic. I just really want to read your second book."
I want to read the next book. That's why I'm doing
Yeah. And
it.
I'm like, I like you. You're a great guy, but great author. But I'm like, I need to find out what happens to these characters. Otherwise, I will die. Literally, it was a for Hellborn King. Amazing book. Second book came out. I was like, okay, cool. I felt like I had done it, But I'm just curious. Are you thinking about? Was this fun for you? You're thinking some other stories with these characters. Like, can we expect another one at least in this world with these characters?
Well, there are two more that I have planned at the
Nice.
moment. So I've got a few things to finish this year, and
Yeah.
then ne early next year I will start writing the second one. I've already started making notes on it. I've actually written the first chapter for it.
Oh, cool.
I spent a week recently on a writer in residence project for something else, and it ended up being a speculative fiction story. And then I kind of thought, well, why create it the world from scratch? And so I kind of backdoor tied it into the same world that this
Oh,
is
that's
set
cool.
in. So I was like,
That's even more exciting.
ah. So it's like, it's not a cop story, it's not Cole's story, it's just another story within this world. And I thought,
That's
yeah,
cool.
well, don't reinvent the wheel. I need a speculative world.
Yeah.
And so I've done that. So that's going to be coming out next year. The second
Oh,
novella
cool.
will be written and be coming out 2025 as well. So yeah, and then there's the third one, which is a smaller idea, but I think I know what the story's going to be. That'll be developed the back end of next year, probably for the year after, but we'll see. It may come to me soon and I'll start writing it. But yeah, early doors 2025, I'll start planning and writing the second in the newly named Blackstone Files
Oh, I like
series.
that.
Not
I
quite
like
Dresden
that.
Files. But he's called Cole Blackstone, so it's the Blackstone Files.
Yeah.
So
Oh,
there
that's
you go.
cool. Super cool. That's awesome. Well, that's exciting. I really enjoyed the characters and the story, but I really do want to see more of the world. And I totally get that. Like I had some stuff where I'm like, oh, I might want to try to sell to people, not indie. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna create this other world. I had everything in my own world. I'm like, this is my baby. It's like 20 years in the making. I was like, nobody gets to decide anything but me. Like, I am all of the gods in this world, right? But I have others. I needed something else, right, for short stories or how it is. And I was like, well, if people don't want to buy, I was like, I'd still sell it indie in that world. So I created a whole nother world just for that. So I totally get that. Because I was like, I don't care if somebody else, like, if you want to write in the world, I'm like, all right, let's do this thing. You're gonna co-author? I'm like, sure. But yeah, there's some things where you just need a place, right? So I totally get that. So I'm so glad that you were able to kind of expand the world just with, that type of thing. That's really cool.
Yeah.
But that's a good idea. I think that's for people that are listening. I think that's a great idea, because if you're struggling, maybe go with what you know instead of reinventing the wheel if you can. So that makes total
Yeah, why
sense.
not? Why not?
Super
Yeah.
cool. Well, that's awesome. I'm just curious in terms of, if you have any, I know we're winding down here on time. I'm just curious if you have like any other projects, anything like that coming up that you want to share with us. Now would be the perfect time for our audience before we head out for the day.
Yeah, sure. So my current series is the Nightingale and the Falcon trilogy. It's historical fantasy set in 13th century. It's about the Mongol Empire, which covered a massive portion of the world. And it's essentially, imagine Star Wars in the 13th century. It's about a group of rebels trying to take down the Mongol Empire from within, and they don't have an army. And it's kind of that kind of thing. And they're fighting back. The first book came out in 2023, The Judas Blossom. Book two came out in July just gone, The Blood Dimmed Tide. And book three will be out in May 2025, and that's The Sorrow of the Sea. So that will wrap up the trilogy, and that's it. I'm done. It's already written, it's already been edited, and it's now just got the proofread to be done. And then that will start be out in May. I am 110,000 words into a new fantasy novel. It's a
Oh, wow.
standalone. I should finish it at Christmas, and then give it to my agent, and we'll see. It'll either go traditional published or it will end up self-published. But either way, that is something that's coming out. I then will start writing the sequel to New York Minute in January 2025. And I've got something else my agent kind of liked the sound of. So she wants me to write some chapters for that so I can pitch them to her and see what she thinks. So there's a lot going on already.
That's a ton.
It's like, that's three, at least three projects I've got to kind of write next year. So at least one full novel next year, a second novella and something else. Yeah, and I will be releasing this kind of spin-off story that's set in the same world as New York Minute. That will be released at some point, kind of on my website or on my newsletter or something like that. I'll kind of release it because it's like 15,000 words, and I'm probably just gonna like give it away to free for free to people to sign up to my newsletter or something like that.
Oh,
But
cool.
it's set in the same world. It expands some of the kind of world building from New York Minute, and you'll find a bit more out about what's going on in some places. So, and there is a connective little bit of thread that connects it to New York Minute as well for those paying
Oh, that's
attention.
cool.
So there's a little kind of wait, is that? Yes, it is. So.
Oh, that's really neat. That's awesome. I cannot believe I'm talking to you, Herman Stewart Engel. Did not know that Judas Blossom. It's like a Mongol Empire type of thing, and the Mongols are my favorite. So, I
Ah,
already
okay.
he sold me. So, just so you know, he sold me on the trilogy. So, I already bought book one on Kindle. So, I just
Awesome.
now have to try and figure out how to get three books for you in by for 2025. I really hope my workload lessens, or I can write faster. I totally get it. I got like three things. I have a something that was bumped back. Sarah Torms helped me out. She's like, "This is not ready." I'm like, "You're the queen of editing," and I was
She
like, "I
edited
would
this.
listen."
She edited New York
Oh,
Minute. Sarah,
yeah, we talked about that.
so Sarah Chorn was my editor for New York Minute. She's fantastic. What I really like about her as an editor, she'd send me her initial notes, but then she'd send me questions that maybe could be like, what? Oh, right, you're right. Hang on, let me think about that reason. And then I'd add stuff. Or she'd say, this is good, but I think we need a bit more on here. I, as a reader, want more on this moment. Can you push on it a bit more? And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. So I don't always know. So having a perspective like that. So she was absolutely fantastic. She was so good. I really like her, and I'm hoping she'll work on the second novella. And she's like, if I can. So she's keen to do that.
Oh,
But
that's
yeah.
awesome. I think we did talk about that on Twitter actually, or X or whatever.
I
But
think so.
that was, I think it was right when you said that, or I'd seen that. I know we talked about it at some point, but that was like right after I had gotten my feedback, final feedback from her, and I was like, I totally agree with this feedback, because I had like Logan D. Irons, H.L. Tinsley or my alpha readers, and it sucked to have to bump something back, but I had just read your novella, and I was like, oh, I was like, I loved this novella so much. I was like, I want somebody when they read mine, and I had gotten good feedback by all three of them, but I was like, I really want people to really enjoy this. You don't want to spend all this time and then have it be crap. But I think it was really like when you and I talked about, that, and what you said with her notes and stuff, which I totally agree. Like I said to my friend, I was like, look at these notes. I was like, these are just, she could teach a writing class to authors. I'm like, it's just a, but it doesn't surprise me, like Of Honey and Wildflowers, things like that. She's an amazing writer, but yeah, it was super cool. But yeah, I totally get it. Like, so having multiple things come out in the same year, I'm like, my wife and I were like already trying to pre-schedule. I'm like, have to have this chunk, right, to try and talk to people or alpha, beta readers and stuff. And I bumped back my other stuff. So she goes, "You're gonna have like three novellas." I was like, possibly. I was like, maybe bump a novel back that I was prepping. So yeah, three's a lot. I totally get it. I'm like, I feel like one's a lot, let alone like three, no matter what the size of them are, So yeah, I totally get that. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for coming on. This was
My
awesome.
pleasure.
Like I said, I just want to, can't remember if I said before we started recording, or I know I said before, but I don't know about during. It's been a long day. But I just want the audience to know I have read New York Minute, and my review will be up several days after this interview. So if you're
Excellent.
curious, it is a spoiler-free review, but I just talk about what I enjoyed about it and try to get you to read the book. I'll talk about the blurb, the characters a little bit. But make sure you guys are on the lookout for that. The link will actually be, once that's published, will also be in the description below. All of Stephen's social and book links can be found in the description below as well. So please make sure you guys check those out. We want to make sure we're reviewing all products for authors. We have directors on, we have comic book artists, writers, whoever's on, just make sure you're checking them out. If you do buy those products, listen to them on Audible, whatever the medium is, please make sure you review them. It helps out people like Stephen. It helps out the editors, helps out agents, helps out everybody in the process. So we get more stuff and get to talk to Stephen in the future, right? About really cool books and things. So, but Stephen, thank you so much for coming on today. This was awesome. I really appreciate your time. Love the novella. Can't wait. I have at least two of your books. I'll try and get Judas Blossom on there. I'll just add one more. I just won't sleep next year.
It's fine.
But like, how do I go? How do you play Mongols and historical fantasy and then me not do, you know, read that book? So got bumped up for me, so that's really cool. But Stephen, if there's anything I could do, you know, in the meantime, you know, now or, you know, in between these projects, you know, things like that, definitely let me know. By then I'll be on season 5. I think actually for May, just let me know. I always let alumni come back, so I think we'll still be on season 4, probably like the tail end. So if you want to just, you know, put me on your schedule, cool. Nobody cares if I had an extra episode. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a big deal. I don't mind. Nobody out there minds. So as long as, you know, we talk about books and have a good time. So let me know. I'll actually put that in my notes and we can try to record and, you know, whenever you're ready, you know, for, you know, that third book and we can, you know, or any of the novellas and, you know, we'll get the information out. Help as best we can. Cool. All right,
Thank
my friend.
You. Appreciate it. All right.
Yeah, I hope you have a good rest of the night, and I'm sure I'll talk to you later on social media, my friend. Hope you have a good rest of the day.
All right. See you later. Bye.